Today on the Av Podcast, I'm joined by Mark Stoddard, founder and brand designer of Liwi 68, the Live It Wear It brand, as we discuss the initial motivations of how his clothing line got started, the connection he made with Dr. John Carlos, and what the year 1968 means to him, his views on this season's Raptors, and whether or not they'll see a parade down Yonge Street before the Maple Leafs, plus a whole lot more. If you listen to season 3 of The Stoop this summer, we did an episode on the 58th anniversary of Tommy Smith and John Carlos Olympic protests in Mexico City. This is basically the extension of that episode, the remix to that podcast, if you will. All right, so go ahead and check that one out after you finish listening to this one, if you haven't listened to it already. All right? And South Shirav is available wherever you listen to your podcasts. You can catch it on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Play, and Stitcher. Make sure you subscribe to that, and for you to listen to your, and to listen to my entire catalog of podcast shows, make sure you subscribe to SouthShoreAv.com. Once again, that's SouthShoreAv.com. It's the Av Podcast with Cal C on South Shore Av Radio. Here we go.
Welcome to the Av Podcast with Cal C on South Shore Av Radio.
Welcome to the Av Podcast. My guest today is the founder and brand designer for Liwi, Live It Wear It clothing line, where within the brand, he collaborates with Dr. John Carlos, the famed 1968 Olympic sprinter, who silently protested alongside Tommy Smith with raised fists on the metal podium in Mexico City. He's also an artist, community mentor, and he wants Kawhi's laughter permeate throughout the city for the foreseeable future. Ladies and gentlemen, listeners of the podcast, please welcome Mark Stoddard to the show. How you doing, sir?
I'm doing good, brother. Respect. Thank you for inviting me.
Yes, man. No problem. No problem, man. It's greatly appreciated. Seeing that you are a local Toronto guy, what is your feeling about the Raptors so far this season? They got the best record in the NBA. They're 18-4. Kawhi just had a new deal with New Balance. How do you feel about everything? The vibe is nice right now, right?
Yeah, it's they're having the time of their life, I think, as a team. I think that the energy within Toronto is on another high. It's almost like the All-Star weekend. Like, they're in the top of conversations within the league. And it's good that Toronto is getting their due respect. You know what I mean? So it's great to be a Torontonian in six, as they say, right? Mm-hmm, not the team. It's going to be interesting to see what happens in the playoffs, right? But
yeah, I think go ahead, sorry.
No, you're right. They have something. I see the magic. It's almost to me, it's like remember in the Raptors when Vince and T-Mac with the team with Oakley and everybody else. Mm-hmm. It almost feels like that energy to me.
That kind of magic. That was magical. That I think it was Vince's second season. Yeah, that was you're kind of right with that, because I remember those times where you didn't want to miss a Raptor game. Like you'd actually get like upset if you missed the Raptor game, because it was just so exciting. I think, you know, this team is exciting for the fact that like there's actual, you know, especially with Kawhi being here, there's actual championship aspirations that people can actually believe in at least a little bit more than in past years. You know,
but so just to add to what you're saying, it's funny how the league didn't really participate or like kind of set the parameters knowing that they would have been this good, because you have the weekend coming up for the Christmas holidays. The Raptors should have been on TV.
Yeah. No, you're right. You're right. I mean, they've arguably had like one of the best, if not the best, regular season record in the last, we could say the last 3 years for sure. And yeah, I mean, the fact that they finished first overall, I think they probably would have had a guaranteed Christmas playoff spot had they not basically shit the bed against Cleveland last year. I think that was probably the biggest drawback. But I think, you know, by the time they added Kawhi and stuff, it would have been something to consider for sure. I don't think we've ever had a Christmas game, at least in Toronto. Not in Toronto. No.
When Vince was playing, we had the Christmas. They played against I think it was the Lakers or somebody. Vince played.
Yeah, but it was on the road, though. It wasn't a home game, right? I don't think so.
I don't think so. But again, just at least be a part of that, right? Of being the top one to be showcased on Christmas, on a Christmas holiday. It's a big thing.
Yeah, no, for sure. It's one of those milestones, like letting you know that you kind of made it.
Exactly.
And, you know, so it would be nice, especially as, you know, you look and you're guaranteed you're going to see. I haven't even looked at the playoff Christmas list yet, and I'm guaranteed you're going to see the Knicks there.
Exactly. That's what I'm saying. This the optics, right? They don't realize that there's better teams out there, man, that can draw in television viewers.
Yeah, no, I agree. I totally agree. Like teams like Chicago, teams like New York. I understand it's a big, you know, the big city markets, but I, at the same time, I'm like, I don't think they warrant that attention anymore. So it's kind of almost like the Thanksgiving Day game for the NFL, where Dallas and Detroit get it no matter how bad they are. Like Detroit's been terrible for, outside of Barry Sanders, how many years have they been terrible? And every year they get that game at 12:30 Thursday afternoon. You know, it doesn't matter how bad their team is. You know, Matt Stafford is going to be throwing some interceptions and you know, in front of your turkey, you know, all the time. It doesn't make any sense.
It doesn't make any sense to, like you said, it's all about the networks, the money. It all comes into play.
Yeah, it's one of those things. But I guess, yeah, I mean, it's a pretty exciting and a nervous time for you know, people in Raptor land right now, just because the cloud that's kind of hanging over the season is as fun as everything is becoming so far, and watching this team kind of gel together quickly, and watching Kawhi kind of acclimate himself to the team. You know, you can see he's getting a little more comfortable with every game. But like, I think the biggest thing is still that hangs over everything is that, you know, the fact that he's in his contract year, and will he stay, will he go? You know, I think that's like the biggest narrative on the whole season.
Yeah, you're right. It all flies back to how far the Raptors go this year. And they have to be, to me personally, they got to be in the finals, them against Golden State. And A, winning it all, or losing by that last game, game 7.
Oh, you think he needs to go that far? Like, at least, I'm not saying the finals, because, I mean, yeah, I think I kind of agree. I think if they make the finals, you know, Kawhi's definitely staying. But you think they have to go to, like, a game 7?
No, I don't know about game 7, but they have to go that far for Kawhi to decide, you know what, I want to stay with this team.
Anything less is uncivilized, like the whole commercial?
I guess so, but I think we talked before that him going to a different team now, the contract that he thinks he's going to drop, he won't get what he's asking for. Right. He won't get the max deal.
Right.
So that's another thing.
Yeah. So go ahead.
No, like you said, I think we can give him the best deal right now.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I think, again, you know, and I've mentioned this before, that he goes to another team, you know, he's, you know, between moving from San Antonio to Toronto, and then if he goes to a third team in the year, he's leaving $80 million on the table. And I just want to see how he would make that up if he goes somewhere else, because I can't understand where he would make that up. It doesn't make any sense to me. Like that is, I understand you know, like not everything is about the money, but at that point, it's got to be about the money at that point. That's too much money to leave on the table.
Exactly. You're right. And he already has a ring. So what are you really aiming for?
Like, right.
So why not develop with a better team that has that kind of, he has the total freedom with the Raptors that any other team that he can play with.
Oh my God. And on top of that too, like it's like he kind of has a team by the ball, so to speak. You know what I mean? Just because of the threat of him leaving, you want to make him happy. And then the way everything happened in San Antonio, I mean, I don't think anybody fully knows what went on there, but like, you don't know what might trigger him to just go the other way.
Right.
You know, so it's like you're just being yourselves, but it's like, you know, a small part of you, at least the feeling is, it's like you're almost kind of on eggshells. It's a small part. You know, like the winning is great, but like you don't want to, you know, like everything, we thought everything was beautiful in San Antonio last year until it wasn't, you know. You know, so it'll be interesting to see what happens there.
Well, I think, like you said, I think he's learning to gel with some of the players. Like with A, of course, Green is his counterpart partner. But then you have, like, Serge and him are good friends now. They're developing a friendship. So he's slowly building his little niche between the team who he likes to hang out with. So
he's definitely starting to acclimate himself a little more to the city now, which is cool to see, because you know he's an introverted guy. You know, he's one of the, you know, you don't see a lot of introverted superstars. You know, like I know Duncan was kind of one of those guys. You know, like you could go back all the way to like a Kareem, who was one of those guys, but like he definitely fits in that mold where, you know, like even though his talent warrants the superstar tag, it's at the same time like he almost doesn't want the spotlight. Even though the rumor is that he kind of does, but like I don't know. It's just I get the impression that if he can just practice and just go home every night, he would.
Yeah, or the guy, he reminds me of the kind of guy who probably doesn't even shower with the guys and just goes home, just hang out with them.
he just throws on his sweats after the game and after the interviews and just jumps in his car.
Yeah, and goes, peace, I'm out of here. He doesn't even say peace. He just puts the hand gesture, right? And walks out.
But as a fan, like how bad do you want to see a parade going down Yonge Street? I mean, it's been 25 years since the last one, right? With the Blue Jays, the back-to-back Blue Jays title.
The only parade I'll go see is the Leafs, if they do it.
Really?
Yeah, because that's a big question. Would it be the Raptors before the Leafs to win a Stanley Cup, or the Raptors winning the NBA title? Who do you think will get it?
It's a good question, because the Leafs now, you know, they show some promise now. So, I mean, you never know. And you know the way hockey works. You just got to get hot at the right time.
Agreed.
You know? I'm not holding my breath, though, with the Leafs.
Yeah. 1960, I think it's 67.
67, yeah.
Was the last time they won the NHL, the Stanley Cup.
You know, it's funny, man. I when I was younger, man, I always, as a young sports fan, I always liked watching like parades and celebrations and that type of thing. And I was one of those young fans who, even though I was an Expos fan in terms of baseball, I was also a Blue Jays fan. You know, I know I'm probably breaking some sort of Montreal rule right now that you're only supposed to love the Expos, but you know, I used to like Barfield and, you know, Mosley and Greg Bell and George Bell and those guys and stuff. I can't lie. Like, I used to Tony Fernandez. Like, those are my guys, man, back in the day. I used to love those guys.
You had to fall in love with them because, like, they galvanized the community, like, Toronto as a whole for what they did. They put Toronto on our backs at that time.
Mm-hmm.
And even the year when Carter, when he hit that home run against the, don't tell me. Wow. Philadelphia.
Right.
Yo, I remember that exact same moment where I was when he hit that. Like, those are timeless moments. Like, even the time when Ben Johnson and Seoul, when he won. Those are moments for Toronto that you can remember, those times when we did something that people couldn't think that Toronto can do something. So.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Because I know for me, I remember when the first time they won, I was real happy. You know, I was real happy for like Toronto, because I just, you know, it's cool to see a Canadian team, you know, being able to, you know, to be at the end, at the top of the mountain at the end of the day, which I thought was awesome. And then, you know, a few months later, I wouldn't say at the time I was a hockey fan. Well, actually, I kind of was, but either way, the Canadians won. The Canadians, I think they beat the Kings. They beat Gretzky and the Kings, and it was a big celebration. And Montreal celebrations, when they win the cup, the city, like, they tear itself apart. So I was like getting ready to go to like go downtown and, you know, go, you know, celebrate my friends, and my parents shut it down because they knew it was gonna be like the purge. It was gonna be like an episode of the Purge. So, and you know what? And if I'm a parent, I'm not letting my 13 or 14 year old kid go out there either. You know what I mean? So, you know, but at the time I was pissed at the time.
Yeah,
because you know how it is, man. You want to go there and celebrate. You see it on TV, and you feel like you're old enough to do it. Then you're being told no. You know, like it was frustrated. So a few months later, after that, you know, Carter hits that home run, and man, as happy as I was for the Blue Jays to do it again, man, I was jealous. Oh, I was so jealous, especially you know, I you know, hearing the stories from my older brothers and, you know, their friends and, you know, my other siblings and stuff, my sisters and stuff, and just hearing how the whole city was just going crazy. Yeah. And I'm just like, oh my God. Like, I wanted to be a part of that so bad.
I remember that was a home game to do that.
Right.
So just imagine being in that space when he hit that last hit. Remember, just down, you're on the knife, and the man hits that. That's a storytelling right there, man. That's a perfect novel.
Right, man. Right. And when I moved to Toronto, I was like, okay, I'm going to see a parade, you know, at least once before I leave this city. And it's been 20 plus years now, Mark. I'm still waiting for this parade to come down Yonge Street that I could be a part of. I'm still waiting. And not like Caravana, like, you know.
That's what I was going to say. But go to Caravana, that's all you're going to get, bro.
The closest celebration I got to Yonge Street was Caravana Fridays. That's the closest I ever got.
Hey, those are magical moments, man. And they took that away from us again.
Oh, they really did.
Oh, man. I remember when it was like the days when I was on university, Caravana. Bro, that was culture, community, as the essence of what Toronto's all about. That was no gated fence, no nothing. You can walk through, connect with people from wherever you were, connect, build family bonds, and go all the way down to Lakeshore with no drama. Nothing.
And then if you think about it too, like, you can just hop right off the subway basically and just get right into the mix.
Get right into the mix, man. Yo, they took that away from us. Now I've become a corporation.
Oh, yeah, that's a whole other podcast, but I'm it's a sad story with that. But I mean, can you think about it, right? Like, as much as I like the scenery of looking out of Lake Ontario, when it's going down Lakeshore, or when it used to go down Lakeshore anyway. Something about, and I remember that as a kid, something about for it going down Yonge Street was, I mean, it's not Yonge Street, but University. It was cool. Like, it was cool. And then I was told, too, like, because he used to go, you know, by, like, the sick kids, like the kids that was in the hospital, you used to get that vibe and that energy, and they'd feel a lot better. It would raise the spirits of a lot of children that was in the hospital, too, just watching the parade going down, like, you know, they could see it from their windows. So mm-hmm. I think a lot of people were upset. It wasn't just like the urban or the black community that was upset. There was quite a few people upset about that during the time.
Yeah, man. No. But again, we just talked about moments and time. Things are timeless that you can always remember. That's one of those moments, man. And you can never take that away from the people who've been a part of that moment. So interesting. Yeah. No. That up.
No, for sure. For sure. So like I said, I mean, it's, you know, just to circle back to the Raptors. Like, I kind of hope that we do at least get to see a finals appearance. Like, I don't think, I don't know if they're going to be Golden State. I don't think they will, but it would be cool to at least see, you know, have the city embrace that and be a part of that. And, you know, playing a real, you know, a real playoff series deep into the teeth of a series deep into June. Like, that would be awesome. That would be awesome. I think the city would love it, and they need it.
Yeah, I think we need it. I think, we show potential with all these events that's building up to the Raptors having the fortitude to do it, because All-Star Weekend shows that the people coming from the city coming to see All-Star Weekend. So we are invested to know that this can go that way of us winning something like that to that magnitude. And it's one thing I love about Toronto, it's a melting pot of all culture coming to this and supporting it, right?
Right.
It'd be nice. I don't know the time frame of it, but it'd be nice to see that happen.
No, I agree. And it's something that you touched on about, like, just being like, just part of history and having moments remembered in time. And that was, you know, as you said, you could remember where you were in terms of when the Blue Jays won, or when, you know, even when Donovan Bailey won his gold medal. Like, I remember where I was when he did that, and, you know, that was cool for the country as well. Yeah, that was a huge moment.
No, big time moment.
Yeah.
Or when he raced Michael Johnson in the Sky Dome.
Yeah, that was huge. That was huge. Even though it wasn't like an Olympic sanctioned event, like that was huge.
That was like a wrestling match. That was like the UFC of Toronto right there.
They should have done more of those, actually, to be honest with you. Like, I'm surprised they never did those, or like, have you seen Bolt race somebody? You know, you saying Bolt is a bad example because he's just way too fast. But, like, I'm surprised they didn't have one more of those moments, because I was really successful even during that time. I forgot about that, actually.
But those are moments, man. You can't take away from that.
Well, you know what? Just to change the topic a little bit, you know, this past, you know, just about a month or so earlier, as during season 3 of my mini podcast series, The Stoop, I did an episode focusing on the 50th anniversary of the Mexico City Olympic protests. It's called the Tommy and John Sacrifice. New listeners, check it out when you get a moment, maybe after this podcast, of course. But because of that podcast has led me to me meeting with you and, you know, everything else that went along with that. You know, so I, you know, I appreciate the entities that kind of like move, you know, got us together, you know, to be at this stage where we're doing a podcast together, which is cool.
Yeah, for real. But you got to remember the two gentlemen who made that sacrifice is also Peter Norman.
Yes.
He also sacrificed his livelihood. And he, like, out of the three who stood on that podium, he's the one that's passed away.
Right. So he didn't get to see, like, not the accolades, but I guess kind of do almost like the 180 where, like, you're getting, like, ESPY awards and, you know, you're finally being appreciated by your own country and, you know, and the movement's being recognized for what it really was, right? Like, I don't think he probably started to see some of the seeds of that, but, you know, unfortunately his health took him, but... Yeah, you're right. Peter Norman is, and it's funny, like a friend of mine brought it to my attention after the podcast, and I was like, you know what? I'm like, I do remember some of the story about Peter Norman, but, you know, I was just so focused on Smith and Carlos at the time. It's like, yeah, shoot, you're right. You never realize how much of a hit he took, too.
Yeah, it's true. But, and it's funny, if you really look at the layers of that demonstration, and I didn't even know, because common sense, you look at the first place runner and think that's the guy. Not knowing just layers of this story of who contributed, who was doing what. And funny enough, all three of them are Geminis.
Oh, wow.
And that, yeah, like Tommy and Peter are a day apart in their birthdays. They're June 4th and June 5th, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then Peter Norman is June, wow, it's going to escape me. No, it's the 14th or the 13th. I don't know.
Okay.
But that's divine. See the universe in a way, having three Geminis on a podium speaking and making that gesture, that's insane to me.
Now, because of the level that some of your business is involved with, you know, regarding this topic, you know I definitely want to ask a couple of questions, you know, to you with regards to that. Like, so for example, for you, like, what does the year 1968 mean to you, like, when you look at this story and everything else that came along with that in terms of, like, Martin Luther King, you know, being assassinated, and Robert RFK being assassinated, everything else that happened in that year. Like, what does that mean to you?
It's definitely an interesting year of a lot of things that are happening around the world, right? There was definitely a pulse of things that were happening, like the Vietnam War was going on. Wow, my history class right now. But this Muhammad Ali, his belt still being stripped away from him, right?
Right, and, yeah.
Even in Toronto, Lincoln Alexander, first lieutenant governor, was elected in 1968, right? So there's so many things that are happening. And then for myself, the date of my birth happening. So this next week or 2 weeks, my birth will be 50.
Oh, wow.
It's just everything coming full circle, realizing the importance of 68. And look, even Ziggy Marley, his birthday was born. 68. He was born in 68, the day after. So remember when the... Is it September the 7th? No, October the 17th when they legalized marijuana. It's the date of Ziggy Marley.
Oh, wow.
What's the odds of that?
the size of the spliff, if he was here, the size of the spliff he would have smoked. If he was here and said harder, that would have been ridiculous.
So, I can just say 68 to me is an interesting and beautiful year for a lot of historical events. And just to be a part of that, it's great.
And how does the, you know, this Black Fist Salute story, like, how does it resonate with you, like, in particular with this?
It's a global symbol that everybody knows and connects with. Like, before the civil rights, even like the in Europe, people use that gesture of the fist for empowerment, and even in South Africa, the same thing, right? So we already know it's that. It's a global symbol that speaks volumes. And so in the 60s, when they coined it with the Black Panthers, and then even with Dr. Smith and Dr. C, this took it to another level of speaking to that, right?
Mm.
And for me as a designer, it's always like, what do I take from that? How can I tell that story so it becomes timeless? And for Dr. C's story, I just took that fist and added another element, adding the colors to the fist to represent the Olympic rings, and then knocking out the fist and using the silhouette of Dr. C within it. So it's that nuance of telling that story deeper than just the fist. because you can see a fist anywhere. Right. If you can bring a story to that, I think you're doing a due justice to somebody's brand. And I think I did a good job with that for him. I just want to create things that becomes timeless. That's my goal as an artist, is to do that.
And you know what? And looking back, like it's scary to know that when you make a stand, like these are the effects that, you know, of what happened to them. Those are like the cause and effect situations that can happen, especially back in those times. It's one thing, like they're vilified, like they were criminals, you know, even though they're trying to do the right thing, you know, and that has a tremendous effect on just your mental health, your well-being. You know, that's affecting all the your loved ones around you, and
correct.
You know, and you know, like you can't, you know, like in their case, they couldn't get employment a lot of the time, and it's a heavy crown to wear, you know, and it's something that lasted what, like how long is the national anthem, like a minute? If that,
probably,
you know,
up this day it's not as bad, but I think because we can do better research now to figure out the story of the narrative, right?
Right.
At that time, the only earning media you had was the television and the newspaper. And there wasn't no social media, no Instagram, no nothing that actually can kind of combat what the information has been given to you to kind of question it. Mm-hmm. You just took everything for what it is, right?
Right.
So it was hard to just build trust or friendship with people because people just didn't want to be associated with you because you were just, like I said, you were just a villain. And that wasn't even the case. And like you said, now 45 years, now it's up to 50 years. You can see people are realizing, or probably 40 years from the, I don't know. It just took more people to start taking notice to what happened, and then people to realize that it was the right thing they needed to do. And people now are coming back and say that it was the right thing. So I'm, like I said, as an activist in a way, as an artist, I just like finding the truth between the lines. I'm just trying to put that out a little bit more better for people just to digest.
I might be repeating myself with this question, but like, what was the inspiration behind doing the Live It, Wear It 68 clothing line? Like, what was your initial inspiration?
Good question. It was probably when Sean Rose, his birthday was yesterday. Mm. His passing for me in Malvern, like he was a social worker within Malvern. And his passing kind of put the shockwave within the community, right?
I remember that.
At that time, I was working for Cadbury. I was working for them. And I think his passing, I was at a crossroad. I wasn't happy. I was making good money, but I wasn't being at a place where I should be. And his passing shocked me in a way that I got to live my life in the right way. And I decided to quit my job. My contract was up. I didn't want to renew it. I said, let me just get back into painting. I wanted to feel that's my calling, was to create. Mm-hmm. And I started to get back into painting. I wasn't doing my clothing line as much at that time, but I just wanted to paint. And then from painting, being creative off of that, I started getting back into doing t-shirts. And I just did a simple campaign. I did a week supply of shirts for $10 per shirt. No, I forgot the cap. It was a weird campaign, but people were buying into the shirts. I got seven shirts for $50 or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the people who actually supported me at that time, still does at this time, was Cabby Richards.
Right.
And he bought a whole bunch of the shirts and he wore them on the and he wore them on the score.
Mm-hmm.
One of the shirts he wore was the 1968 shirt, and he wore it with Michael Jordan. One of his bigger interviews he had with Michael Jordan.
Mm-hmm.
And kind of just for me, realizing that I can actually create art that people can actually see. I may not connect with them, but they'll actually see my work. And that kind of spun into creating the element of the fist. And I did a campaign within the community to wear it. And it just spun into that. I was documenting photos of people wearing the shirt and just tagging them in Facebook, telling their story. At that time, Facebook was just starting to grow.
Right.
And people were just sharing the photos. And each week, I kept posting another photo of somebody else wearing the shirt. And after that, it just spun into people's like, yo, where can I get the shirt? How can I be in the next photo shoot? Up to now, up to this day, people still want to wear or be part of the next photo shoot. So that spun into now me connecting with Dr. Carlos in 2010, close 2010 to 2011. And ever since that day, we've been working together. So something is put out to the universe, man. Things that's developed and just grow into something that's wonderful.
It's funny how death can make you like, it kind of like hits home to the point where it almost makes your visions clear. Like it kind of removes like the obstacles and the doubt and the fears, and everything just kind of just shakes itself to the side. You know what I mean? Like it's weird how that situations like that can happen. Like how it does that to you. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Because there's two things that are guaranteed in life is your birth and your death. The question is what you do in between those numbers. Right.
Right.
And those are those timelines of legacies. Like we just talked about earlier about timeless stuff that people can always remember you by, because we're not going to be here for 100 years, but whatever that legacy piece you leave behind is what's going to build your blueprint of people to remember you by. If it's through music, if it's through athletics, if it's through arts, you have to leave something behind. You have to leave a distinct imprint that you are here.
I totally agree. Otherwise, what are you here for? You know what I mean?
Like exactly.
And it's something very simple, but it's crazy when you look at life and not a lot of people live that way. It's a simple thought process, but it's not simple for people to figure that out. It's weird how that works.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like even with myself, like podcasting wise, like it's, you know, for me, it's like how that even got started was just, I always loved the fact of doing like radio and television, that type of thing. But long story short, like I had a friend of mine that we were trying to like get on the radio. One of my friends, he's actually like a past, like he's a contributor to like the South Sharaf family right now, and by the name of Headley. And we were trying to get a show on CIUT for like a while, sure. And it just wasn't working out. So we kind of just took a break from it. And, you know, you're just working and you're doing your everyday life and stuff. But like that thing was always kind of nagging at me. You know what I mean? Like, it's like that, not nagging at me, but like, it was like something that I knew that I had to explore again. You know what I mean? Like I couldn't leave that what if hanging in the, you know, like just hanging in the closet, you know, anymore. You know what I mean? Like it was one of those things where I had to like just explore that and just see what happens. You know what I mean?
Agreed.
You know, and as you know, been doing it for like 2.5 years now, but it's like, I love it. You know what I mean? Like I love all the whole process. I love the whole journey of it. And I think that's where the key to life is. You know what I mean?
You got the labor of love. When you're passionate for something, that doesn't, it's not about the money. It's just about doing something that is drawn to you, right?
Mm-hmm.
And sticking to it. And again, nothing's going to get good days or bad. Just got to keep doing it, right? Because you believe in it.
Yeah. That's the biggest thing. And you know, you always believe, I'm always a big believer that, you know, the things that you want, it'll eventually come, but you gotta love the journey. You know, if you're passionate about something, you gotta love the journey as much as you love the thought of the finish line. You know what I mean? You gotta love the journey in between that too.
Yeah. Right? You have to.
Now, how was the, you know, you're mentioning how you hooked up with Dr. John Carlos, like, how did that connection happen, you know, for you meeting with him and coming together on this collaborating project, if you mind me asking? Like, how did that come together?
Dave Zirin is also the co-writer of the Dr. John Carlos story. And he was in the city with Dwayne Watson, Sweets.
Okay, yeah.
Organized.
NBA TV.
Yeah, he brought Dave down to do a, he had a doc, he did, yeah, like a mini doc that he had. And I just said that was the opportune time to actually tell him who I was and what I was trying to do. And he mentioned to me that Dr. Carlos is writing a book, and I'm also helping him with that book. And I told him that I am a graphic designer. I love any way that I can kind of align myself to help him.
Right.
He said, I'll do my part of reaching out, sending you an email, and see what happens from that. Funny enough, I still remember that first conversation I had with Dr. Carlos. I was like hearing one on the phone for the first time. It's almost like a person you always saw in your mind as, or a poster on your wall that I had, and to actually hear his voice for the first time, I was like it's like hearing like a rock star or something like that. I was like, I didn't know what to say. I was speechless. So he just totally said, Mark, whatever that is, I'm your brother. Whatever you want to express to me, how you want to help, let me know and see how we can work that out. And ever since that conversation, we just built this. He's not even like he's my mentor. He's like my dad. He's like my brother. So many different layers how this relationship is with him. It's very organic and that we have, and I'm appreciative of that, right? Because you don't get those moments like that. You don't. So I'm honored just to be in his presence in a way of just being a part of history. Because that's what he is, right? He made an impact that's historical. It's not going to, it's beyond him, right?
Yeah.
So it's how do you keep that story relevant to today's society, like with the Colin Kaepernick of the world? Like, how do you keep your story connected to each event that happens around the world, right? And it becoming that conversation of discussion.
And I mean, it's not every day that your poster just comes off the wall and starts connecting with you in real life, right?
Yo, trust me. Think about it. I was in grade, when I heard about this demonstration, I was in grade 9. I seen the picture in a history book, knew of it, didn't know the. Okay, I'll give you another thing that's kind of crazy. 89, I was nominated for the Harry Jerome Award.
Okay.
I didn't know nothing about Harry Jerome.
Right.
Just knew that he was a track athlete, blah, blah, blah. Until I did my own research. And when Charles Officer did a documentary, the Mighty Jerome,
mm-hmm.
I met the Jerome family at that time. I didn't know Harry Jerome's race or his last race was in 1968. And that spun me down the rabbit hole of connecting the dots.
That's
of realizing that I was printing paintings in a way that's tying into who I was. I just didn't know. But you just could do things. You start feeling how this is the essence of athlete it is for you. And it's through Harry Jerome's family that allowed me to connect the story of 1968 with Dr. Carlos, Tommy Smith, Peter Norman, and all the other events outside of that. So it's the universe, man. It's weird for me how to go into detail, but whatever you put out there, it'll allow it to manifest itself. It will come to reality, man. Trust me when I say.
Yeah, well, just to get a little bit further, like how did like they connect you? Was that just the Jerome family? Like, how did they connect the dots with you? Was that just that award was like the initial spark it gave you, or is it this?
No, it was. I was nominated. That was in '89, but I was just showing that I was aware of those moments, but not knowing the connection would be even bigger than just knowing it.
Okay, I got you. Okay,
so earlier. I don't know what year, but Charles Officer did the documentary. It was probably early 2010.
Mm-hmm.
As when I built a relationship with Charles Officer, and he told me what he was doing, and then he wanted me to be involved in creating the poster for the movie.
Okay.
So through the news articles that I got from the family, I start realizing that, wow, Harry Jerome did all of this stuff, like his adversity, what he went through, like, being the top Olympian for Canada and the biggest race that he had to, like in Rome, he failed. I think in it, like any, and then I think it was in, I forgot the one of the other races he had, he severed his quadricep and they're pretty much telling him he couldn't run again, but he proved them wrong in 1964 in Tokyo when he raced against, keep forgetting his name, the U.S. runner. They call him the Bullet. Shoot. And he played for Dallas after racing.
Bob Hayes.
Thank you mm-hmm. very much. Yeah, Bob Hayes.
Mm-hmm.
And that, if you watch that race, man, that's insane. In Tokyo, the Bob race, I mean, Bob Hayes killed everybody in that race. But Harry came in third. And that's a comeback in itself.
Right, considering everything that happened.
Exactly. And then after that, going into the Commonwealth and getting the gold. So it just showed him never giving up. And that documentary for me and getting all the research and then realizing, like I said, in 1968, that was his last race and knowing Dr. Carlos. You just never know who you're connected with.
Yeah.
Right.
Mm-hmm. It's incredible, man. Like, it's like hearing a... You know, even doing my research on this last month and, you know, like and going over that, like just reliving that experience again and just going over the history of that. I don't think like words don't do it justice. You know what I mean? At this point, like it's awesome. Like I think it's one of the most incredible stories you'll ever see, you know, especially seeing like how, you know, it went from the high to like the to the lows of lows. And now it's like it swung back again where. You know, it, like they're alive to see the roses. You know what I mean? Get the roses while they're still living. And it's, I think it's a beautiful story at this point. You know, yeah. Anything further that happens with it, and everything, you know, like people like yourself that continue to contribute to pushing this story forward, it's, you know, it only helps like grow that story further, to me anyway.
I agree. And my job, like for as a visionary, is like I do a lot of these art programs with kids about branding and telling their stories. Mm-hmm. And that I actually, through my own story, I tell my events. And my connection with Dr. Carlos is fundamentally is important. So it's like creating these legacy pieces and allowing these kids to realize that they have a story that can be told, because we all are storytellers. Mm-hmm. Right? And Dr. C always says we live to make history.
Yeah.
So every day is all about making your impact on this world. I'm just, like I said, I'm thankful that it's happening this way for me, because again, I'm a part of history.
Now, going forward, what are your plans that you know, if you're allowed to share, like what are your plans that you have for this segment of your line going forward?
Just building with them. We have some new concepts are coming out in the new year. It's just telling the story in different places, right? It's been the objective for us. Like online's been very well. Like if you go to his website, www.johncarlos68.com, you get to see all the designing that I was involved in doing for him, all the branding for him.
Right.
So it's just keep doing that and hopefully other things happening. They're in the works of a movie. So
okay, good.
That'd be phenomenal when that comes out.
Is it like a movie, like Jesse Owens type of movie, or is it like a documentary?
Exactly. No. It'd be an actual movie.
Oh, okay.
It's a perfect time for it, right? So yeah. We'll see what happens with that. Hopefully it comes out sooner than later. We'll see what happens. But yeah, pretty much it. And that's your answers.
You think you get to play yourself in the movie?
That little cameo like how Spike Lee does it, right? Yeah, who knows?
Oh, you're like on the Movator, you're just moving along, like,
you know what I'm saying? Who knows? But at the end of the day, it doesn't be know that it's happening. It's a phenomenal moment just to be there. I can say I had my part in the way of this preserving his story in the right way. So I'm thankful.
No, without a doubt. You know, before we wrap up, you know, I just got to ask, because you're familiar with obviously the Kaepernick situation, and better yet, like the situation with Eric Reid is his ex teammate who's still being targeted by the NFL, even though he signed back with the Carolina Panthers. Just in case you weren't aware, he had a bunch of random drug tests.
Yeah, the drug test.
Yeah, even though he's never failed the drug test, he's had a 6th random drug test so far. Since he's been back in the last 2 months, just what are your thoughts on the situation, just in relation to, you know, everything that happened back in 68 to like 2018? Like when you see this stuff now, like what are your thoughts on like those situations now?
Well, when you're part of that struggle of being a freedom fighter, brother, there's just all the powers that be are always going to try and ways to just to belittle you or just try to find any negative outcourse. You just got to weather that storm, man. And I think he's doing a fantastic job by doing that, right? Mm-hmm. And I love about the media, like, you can't fool us. There's so much information that's out there that you're not going to buy into the okey-doke. It's going to happen. It doesn't surprise me. They're just trying to find other ways of just trying to discredit the guy.
Because you hear about those stories back in the day. Like, this is something that I swear, like, you feel like you would have read about in the 60s or the 70s and that type of thing. You know, but it's like, to see it now, it's almost surreal, you know what I mean? Because it's like, it's almost like you're trying to hide in plain sight. It's like that kid playing hide and go seek, and he's always hiding behind the telephone pole. I can see your shoes, you know what I mean? So when I see the situation with you know, like the NFL still targeting like an Eric Reid or not signing Kaepernick, regardless of the fact that there's a bunch of terrible quarterbacks out there, you know, we have to relive the Peterman experience in Buffalo. Like, it's, You see all these situations, and you just, it's almost comical. It's almost comical that they're still trying to stick it to them, and like there's still some people who don't see it. And I'm like, how do you not see this? It's so plain.
Yeah, it is. It's not for everybody. Everybody doesn't want to swallow that pill, man.
No, no, absolutely not. Like it's insane to me. Now, before we go, you know, definitely, you know, I can tell you, Mark, thank you so much for coming on the podcast. You know, it's definitely been a pleasure, 1,000%.
Thank you.
I feel like this is like the remix to like the pot I did earlier.
it's just an additional part of it. Agreed. So when they hear that first one, they get the other aspect of it. So yeah, cool.
The other aspect of it, yeah, which I love. I love that. I kind of want to give you the time for the next couple of minutes to plug your clothing line or whatever else you got going on. And just before you mention what you got going on, regarding your clothing line, I've seen it the last few years or so. But I honestly, you know what? I wasn't fully aware. Just to be honest, that it was a local Toronto-based company. Like you were here. Like I didn't realize it was. Cause I used to see it. I'm like, oh, that's kind of dope. But not realizing it was, you know, it was in the city the whole time.
Yeah, this is one of my interesting situations I'm in living in Toronto. Like I've been designing for like
a long time. Yeah.
Yeah. From my first T-shirt was in '89.
Wow.
And that first shirt, it was like I said, on University, on Carabana Day, I created a shirt that was like the image of the Black Panther with the Africa behind him. And there's just a crew of my boys just wore those shirts. And right there, I realized that when the reaction from people looking at us, like, who are you guys? Where are you guys from? Like, we're from Toronto, but the way we wore those shirts, we're like, we're instant celebrities. So I realized from that moment, I could actually create ideas and put them on shirts. I thought, I can do something as an artist in that aspect, do it with t-shirts. So let's fast forward to today. I get the love from Toronto, but at the same time, I feel like Toronto, they get too comfortable that I'm here. I can get to market anytime and get his stuff. But when I'm in the U.S., it's a different atmosphere because they kind of connect to what the brand is about, and right away they just gravitate to buying it. Here, it's almost like I have to do like go to a local event or something and people will come to support it. Right. I get that. But on a one-way, like somebody wants something, it's one of those challenges like any business person has to do. How do you continue to stay relevant with your work that people will continue to support you? Like recently, I just did a new concept with Vile Desmond with the $10 bill.
Yes, yes. Which I see,
So I flipped an idea with it. I did her name. And then within her name, I put $10 in it, because if you spell her I like the I O,
yeah,
it becomes 10.
Right.
So I played off of that, and then I said I did like a Cyber Monday, for a shirt for $10. That reaction got people to start buying into it, right? So it's just those moments you create something, and people see it, and they'll support it. So I always recommend it. Anybody as you believe in your brand, you just gotta continue believing in it, create new relevant ideas. Stay in the pulse of the community, right?
Mm-hmm.
People tend to forget.
Yeah, so. No, it's true. You almost sound like one of those, like, you know, I used to say, like, in the 90s, like, it's like a music artist who had the love but doesn't get fully appreciated. They go to across the border, then they blow up, and then everybody's like, oh, yeah, I know Mark for years. That's my boy. I love Mark.
Yeah. You know? And I'm not hating on that in any way. I just know the reality of it, right?
Right, right, right.
And I'm not mad. I just, like, for me, it's a challenge because I don't want to be the person, like, it's when you pass and you leave off this, you transition from this plane and people now want to buy a part of your legacy. I don't want that. I want people to smell the roses while you're here.
Yeah, absolutely.
I love to see people wearing a shirt. And I love to see somebody who buys a shirt and I don't even know them.
Yes.
And I see them wearing it. Yeah. That's one of the beautiful feelings to have, that you didn't have to go through I know Mark to get it. They saw I like the shirt and I want to wear it.
That's ultimately where you want to go, right? Because that's everybody knows that your energy, your message is being sent. It's, you know, exactly. It's being properly distributed.
Exactly.
As I like to say. But sorry, you know what? I did promise. Let me step back. I want you to go plug your stuff. So go ahead, man. Let me.
I thought I was plugging myself.
You are. But I want you to tell people where they can get get access to your clothing line and how they can stay in contact with you and everything else. Like, just, you know, I want to step back and just give you the time just to plug it and just,
and,
you know,
and
yeah.
Say something nice and then drop the mic kind of thing, right? So. You put me on the spot, but I honestly, I hope that this moment that we talk, that people now be more curious to figure who I am. And it's interesting. I remember his favorite quote is, tell me the facts and I will learn. Tell me the truth and I believe. But if you tell me a story, it'll live in my heart forever. So hopefully this conversation we just had together will kind of get some people to be more curious to figure out what I'm all about. And the best way is checking out the website, which is liwi68.com. And that's liberywear.com. That's my little plug.
Perfect, man. Thank you, brother. Thank you, brother, for hopping on this podcast, man. Like I said, it's been no a problem. Pleasure.
And I think I'll be back again because we got some other stuff to talk about.
Oh, you know, no.
Like Dwight Howard.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely, yeah. We didn't get a chance to touch. I don't think that Dwight Howard situation is going away anytime soon.
Anytime soon, bro.
And on that note, I'm gonna need that Viola Desmond shirt, man. I'm just gonna tell you that right now. I need my own copy. I'll pay for it. Don't get me wrong. I'll definitely pay for it.
But you know what?
I need my own T-shirt.
I'll do this. I'll do up to this podcast. So I'll the price will still stay the same. If anybody who listens to this podcast, the price for it is $10. Damn. But you have to send me an email that you listen to this podcast. And then I'll honor that by giving you that shirt for $10.
Perfect.
info@liwi68.com. You know what? Send me an email from there. Let me know you listen to the podcast. And I'll honor that shirt for $10, the Viola Desmond $10 T-shirt.
Perfect. Enough said.
All right. That's my plug. There you go. That sounds better.
Sounds good to me. Thank you all for tuning in to the AV Podcast today. And as always, it's greatly appreciated. Special shout out goes out to Mark Stoddard for coming on the show to connect and to share his story about his brand and his passion. To check out his clothing line and collection of prints and artwork, do yourselves a favor and go check it out at liwi68.com. Once again, that's liwi, liwi68.com. I'm going to repeat what this man said. He's got limited edition Viola Desmond T-shirts. Viola Desmond is the first Black Canadian and the first Canadian woman to be featured on this country's currency. He's made a T-shirt in honor of this. If you email him at info@liwi68.com and tell him that you've listened to this podcast, you can have your very own for only $10. I mean, you can't lose. For $10? Now that you listen to the podcast, go ahead and follow his instructions, please. The shirt is fly. I'm getting one myself as soon as possible, so act fast before it's gone and get your own. And you can also check out his Instagram page at liwi68 to check out the limited edition tee and to keep up to date with his newest prints. All right, so we've looked out for your future cloth items. Let's look out for your ears one more time. South Sharaf is available wherever you listen to your podcast. And to continue to support the podcast, you can listen to it on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Stitcher, as well as Spotify under the South Sharaf name. So listen and subscribe to that. And to filter through my entire catalog of podcast shows, make sure you subscribe to SouthSharaf.com. Once again, that's SouthSharaf.com. For Mark Stoddard, this is Cal C. And you've just tuned in to the AV Podcast on South Shore AV Radio. Until the next episode, folks, peace. We out.